You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Today we are in Benevento.
Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora.
So here we are, Lionel, Tuesday evening, just after stage four, relaxing, discussing who might win tomorrow in Benevento. And you know, I really fancy Andre Greipel for that one.
Nailed on, I'd say.
So that was Lionel and I chatting on Tuesday evening. Here we are on Wednesday. And just like Daniel Freeb's correct prediction that Diego Lucy would win on Tuesday, I correctly predicted that Andre Greipel would win in Benevento on Wednesday. Remarkable record. That's two out of two for us. It's your turn tomorrow, Lionel.
Remarkable stuff.
Who do you think will win tomorrow?
Put me on the spot there. I think tomorrow Tom Dumoulin will win.
Okay, not sure about that. Anyway, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And our stagiaire, Kayleigh Fretz.
Hello.
Kayleigh Fretz from Velo News, of course, who has joined us on the podcast before last year at the Tour de France. And we're hoping you'll be joining us a lot more at the Tour de France this year as well, Kayleigh. Dove siamo, Lionel?
We're outside a little bar in Benevento. And this really is my image of southern Italy. When we were talking to Daniel about what southern Italy would have in store for us, this was the image I had. You know, it's bustling. Some of the buildings are pretty run down, but it's teeming with life. The traffic jams and the number of people out having a drink or some ice cream or some frozen yogurt, I think, down there. Everyone's been enjoying the Giro d'Italia here. Quite muggy and a bit overcast here. It's not as warm as it was yesterday, which is so we both chose to wear shorts, eh, Rich?
Yeah, we wore shorts and the temperature dipped a little, first day in shorts. So, you know, we might be tipping the correct winners of the stage, but we're not getting everything right. Oh, my goodness, look who it is, Lionel. It's Ned Bolting.
Goodness me.
Hi, Ned.
Oh, have I just given the game away?
No. Okay. Spoilers are fine. If people are listening, they should expect spoilers, really, because we are talking about what happened in the stage. How are you? How was it for you today?
Oh, it was screamingly dull, wasn't it?
Great, you're really selling things here.
It was. They got it all wrong, I think. They've got a lot right so far on the Giro, but all the action was, we had the King of the Mountains in the first 35K that television missed, which would have been a flicker of excitement. Then those four got up the road. We missed the two intermediate sprints that weren't terribly interesting anyway. And we missed Daniel Oss crashing as well, which was quite interesting. And then we had 90 kilometres of absolutely nothing before it all kicked off. And then it was quite interesting.
Well, anyone ever seen Daniel Oss and Daniel Freeb in the same room?
What about, have you done the aerodynamics of hair billowing out of the back of helmets? Save that for a podcast some other time.
We've got the right man for that, though.
We've got lots to talk about here because Kayleigh is our equipment man. We're going to be talking actually about motors and bikes. Ned, thanks very much for your cameo. We'll give you a call later for dinner, perhaps. Kayleigh has been covering the particular story about motors and bikes quite closely. And you've been covering equipment for years, Kayleigh. So in the final part of today's podcast, we're going to be talking about that. Kayleigh has some news on that from a chat he had this morning with some of the UCI bike inspectors, so we'll hear more about that in the final part. But in the meantime, well, Ned's just given us a summary of the stage, but can you give us your summary of the stage, and hopefully make it a bit more compelling than that?
The tale of the Tapa, stage 5, 233 kilometres from Praia a Mare to Benevento, the second longest of this year's Giro, which might account for the slightly tame racing. Always looked to be one for the sprinters, but actually there were quite a lot of hills on the way, and the finish was deceptive, as Andre Greipel talked about in his press conference. It wasn't quite what the sprinters were expecting. That attack by four riders shaped the day. Daniel Oss of BMC, Alexander Foliforov of Gazprom, Amet Struka of Orica and Pavel Brut of Tinkoff. Daniel Oss was the guy who had the crash and ripped a big hole in his shorts. I nicknamed him Daniel Off on Twitter, which is, I know you can hear the clang from here, can't you? Anyway, those four got 5.5 minutes at
Look
one
at that,
point.
That tumbleweed going up the middle of the road there. It's all gone very quiet here.
Anyway, that group got 5.5 minutes advantage at one point. It got cut down and down, and it's hovering at about 40 seconds with 16k to go, then 15 seconds with 10k to go, and they finally caught with 7 to go. On the finishing circuit, or just before the finishing circuit, Marcel Kittel, the big German sprinter, he was among those dropped. And then on the run-in, a Katusha rider crashed on the left-hand bend with about a kilometre and 1.1 kilometres to go. There was a surprising little drag up to the line, and then it was Andre Greipel who got the stage stage victory. And in fact, Greipel has won a Grand Tour stage every season since 2008, thanks to Shawnee Boy on Twitter for sending us that little nugget. But really, Richard, the big news from the press conference is of Tom Dumoulin's post-race food habits. As you know, yesterday he had two slices of pizza on his way from doping control to the press conference. I hope he washed his hands. I'm assuming he would have done. Anyway, today he brought with him an omelette sandwich and a banana. More news on Tom's dinners as we have it, as the as his spell in the pink jersey carries on.
Are you trying to set up a daily feature here to rival the Shark's Tale?
I don't think that's possible, Rich.
I neglected to mention, but today's installment of the Shark's Tale is really quite extraordinary. It's just getting more. We're getting more and more to the core of the man, Vincenzo Nibali.
We should point out, this isn't a spoof. This is actually genuine lines from Nibali's autobiography. Yeah.
I said on Twitter as well that I bumped into Ciro in the car park where all the team buses were parked after the finish, and I said, "Who are you looking for, Ciro?" And he said, "I look for the Shark." I love that casual use of a rider's nickname. Kaylee, Ned wasn't too impressed by the stage, but Andre Greipel, I mean, he's been very quiet. He's not figured at all in the sprints that we've had so far, and that was a very impressive win by him today.
Absolutely unbelievable. I think 500 meters. I have to say, cheering for Damar just a bit. He was my pick before the stage started, but there was absolutely no touching Andre today. I mean, he seemed to have an extra gear compared to everybody else in the front of that field.
He, interesting, said in the press conference, didn't he, Lionel, that this was not a sprinter's stage. And, you know, he is a sprinter, but he's a lot more than a sprinter as well, isn't he?
Well, yeah, we've seen him off the front in the Spring Classics quite a few times. He can climb. He's a very meaty guy, isn't he? But not particularly tall. So, you know, solid, low centre of gravity. And he can climb well. Yeah, as you say, the point he made in the press conference was there was 3,000 metres of altitude gain on today's stage, and that's quite significant. I know it was long, 233 kilometres, but you've still got to climb those metres, and it was too much for Marcel Kittel, obviously.
It makes me wonder whether he's looking toward the Tour de France in the green jersey, because Sagan has owned that so well, because he's able to get all over all of those climbs and then get the points. If Greipel can turn himself into a similar rider, he could maybe break Sagan's streak. I mean, we could see that for the first time this summer.
We've seen him the last couple of years, as you say, Lionel, being really aggressive in the Tour of Flanders and off the front. And, you know, he figured quite late in the race this year. And he is somebody who you think perhaps could turn himself into a slightly different kind of rider, more of an all-rounder, but in doing so maybe he loses a bit of his top end speed.
Well, we should point out that it was this podcast just before the Tour de France last year. You're wincing, Rich, you know what's coming. We described Andre Greipel as a fading force because he had a similar sort
of... I think it was you.
Was it me or was it Daniel? I can't remember.
Fading force, that's not one that's ever passed my lips.
I block these things out if it was me, but it was certainly put out on the cycling podcast.
It was Daniel.
But his record in the Grand Tours is consistent. He always gets a win in one of the three. As I said, going back to 2008. And remember, I mean, he and Mark Cavendish were the big rivals then in the High Road team. And Cavendish, I think, had won three stages by that point. And there was almost that little gift of Cavendish letting Greipel take, I think it was stage 17 of the 2008 Giro. Cavendish finished second, his teammate just behind Greipel on that occasion. And that kind of propelled Greipel forward. And then the two of them didn't race together in the same teams, I think, at all after that. Certainly would have been very rare. But Greipel's moved on then to the Lotto Soudal team as it is now, and he delivers the goods every Grand Tour that he's in, whether it's one win or two or three wins. And I think Mark Cavendish always makes the point that for the sprinters, winning one is an achievement. Because of the multiple wins that Cavendish has got over the years, it's kind of like taken for granted that sprinters like Cavendish and Kittel now will come and take a handful of wins, but getting one, and getting one in slightly unusual circumstances like today, is a big thing for Greipel.
Well, I caught up very briefly at the end with Adam Hansen, his Lotto Soudal teammate, who's running his 14th consecutive Grand Tour. He was eating, so he had his mouth a little bit full, but he did speak for a minute.
Was it birthday cake?
It was his birthday. He wasn't eating birthday cake, but it was his birthday, 35. 14th consecutive Grand Tour, so that means for the last 5 years he's ridden all three. remarkable, really.
I worked out that if you take all of those Grand Tours and in a row and you started riding them on January the 1st, his run would stretch to the end of September. That's how long that record of unbroken Grand Tour stages is.
I asked Adam whether this was a stage that Greipel had identified as one for him.
Yeah, it was. He really wanted to win the stage, and you know, he picked four stages before, and this is one of them, so it was perfect for him.
How about you? How's your bid for a record going, and how long is it going to go on?
Oh, I don't know. I'll keep going until I enjoy it, so I'll keep going. At the moment, I'm going good, so I have no reason to stop.
Was the Vuelta last year one of the toughest that you've had?
Yeah, the Vuelta was hard. You know, when you do them, they're all hard, and afterwards they all seem easy, so it's a bit hard to know which one's the hardest.
Do you have in your mind, though, I've let you say this already, but do you have in your mind a target, or are you literally just going to keep going?
I'll just keep going.
And it's your birthday today. Happy
it
birthday.
It is. Thank you very much. Thank
any
you.
Birthday wishes in the peloton?
Yes, many, so it's good.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Eurosport sponsor our Daily Pedaler de Charme award, which has kicked off. It started now. And I presented the coveted Pedaler de Charme t-shirt to Valerio Conti, who did an amazing job the previous day for Diego Ulissi, was a popular choice as Pedaler de Charme. Very popular choice today was Daniel Oss, who was in the breakaway. He has got very exuberant hair.
Exuberant hair, yeah.
he's got remarkable hair, and he is quite a striking looking fella, and he was in the break most of the day, fell off. I stood by his bus for a while at the end, and I was going to present him with a t-shirt, but there are times when it just isn't the right moment to present a rider with a Pedaler de Charme t-shirt. And today was one of those non-moments, because he emerged from the bus looking pretty bashed up. He fell off and he cut his arm pretty badly. So he was off to be cleaned up and possibly stitched up. But I'll go and see him in the morning, and I'm sure he'll be in good humour then to collect his Pedaler de Charme t-shirt. So keep your nominations coming in. Hashtag PDC Giro. Hashtag PDC Giro. Had to think about that. And if you copy in Eurosport UK TV as well, that would be great. And obviously at cycling_podcast. So listen, anything else? We're going to move on to motorised doping in the final part. Kayleigh's here to give us a bit of an update on that. But any other observations today? Nothing obviously really changed overall, Lionel?
No, not really. I mean, I joked earlier that I think Tom Dumoulin is going to win tomorrow, the first uphill finish of the Giro. I don't really. I mean, the beauty of the stage like this is...
do or you don't?
I don't, no. But I think he will stay in pink. I think his advantage is enough. But the beauty, Dumoulin said it's not a particularly hard finish, but that's often the ones that catch people out, isn't it? Because if it's raced hard, suddenly it becomes super hard and less predictable than the long, high 2,000-metre climbs that are much more of a grind and are raced rather more defensively. And these stages, when everyone's fresh, everyone's feeling pretty good, you know, there's still probably 20-odd riders who are genuinely thinking they can finish on the podium. And so that leads to a certain anarchy, and I think we might see a really exciting finale tomorrow.
A lot of people are saying, commenting that Dumoulin is a very appealing guy to have in the race lead. A lot of journalists who were on the Vuelta last year as well were really taken with him. He's a very charming, very articulate guy who does his press conference duties with good grace. I don't know, have you had many dealings with Dumoulin, Kayleigh?
Yeah, I had a nice long sit down with him at Richmond Worlds last year, actually. And yeah, he's just charming. He's lovely to talk to, and his English is fantastic, and that definitely helps, as most of the Dutch riders are. And in these press conferences, he's shown up and answered all the questions with a smile, and you know, never gets sort of testy or anything like that. He really is a phenomenal leader, particularly given the start this year, but even down here in Italy.
They do. Him and Kittel, I guess, you know, have both been people who come into press conferences, and it's a pleasure to hear them speak. They're both very intelligent and eloquent. We're putting together a little mini special on Tom Dumoulin and an interview with him yesterday. We're speaking to a few other people about him, and that will be released for friends of the Cycling Podcast next week. Sign up as a friend at thecyclingpodcast.com. It's £10 for the year. All sorts of goodies, including Joe Dombrowski's Giro Diary. He's doing an audio diary, recording behind-the-scenes stuff every day. I had a chat to his press officer, Matt Bowden, a couple of days ago. And
former colleague of Kayleigh's,
former colleague of Kayleigh's, yeah. I had a chat to him, and he came up to me and says, hey, Joe's doing a great job. I went, what, you mean in the race? He went, no, I mean with your audio diary. Which I'm glad to see he's got his priorities right. So that's really reassuring. Anyway, at the finish today, I was wandering around and I saw Douglas Ryder, the general manager at Team Dimension Data, the man who really set up the whole African team, as it's known. It was MTN Quebeca. It's now Team Dimension Data for Quebeca, I think is the full name of the team. And I had a chat with him about how the team is doing, what its aims are here. They've got Merhawi Kudus, the young Eritrean, who's a great prospect. And I wondered if this was a race where they might be expecting something from him. He's certainly a contender for the young rider competition. And I also asked him about the departure of Brian Smith, who British cycling fans will know well. He left recently his role as general manager. So here is Douglas Ryder. How's the Giro going for you at the moment?
Yeah, it's going nicely. I think, unfortunately, we lost a rider today. He crashed really hard yesterday, Omar Fraley, and we pride ourselves in getting all of our riders through Grand Tours, you know, and doing the best that we can and giving everyone an opportunity. So that was a bit disappointing and sad for him and for the team, I guess. But, yeah, other than that, we've had two top tens. We wore a jersey for a day with the King of the Mountains jersey. So I think it's going well so far. As a team, we're always very aggressive and wanting to, I guess, show what we can do, and we look forward to keeping Costa up there, Igor up there, and potentially keep Mahawi up for the best young riders jersey. He's seventh overall in that at the moment. Lost a little bit of time yesterday, wasn't really suited to him, but you know, when it becomes more hilly, we hope that Mahawi can really do something in this race.
He had a crash the other day as well. He had quite a bloody elbow at the finish. Is he okay after that?
Yeah, luckily, you know, he's such a skinny guy that when he crashes, he usually crashes like right holes right into himself. So very fortunate that he's okay, and it was just his arm really, and it wasn't too bad, but it takes a day or so to recover from that, as you know, a big knock on the side of your body. But let's hope that he recovers and he can have a good day tomorrow. Tomorrow's the first test, so let's see that, and hopefully he'll be up there and stay, you know, in contention for the best young rider jersey.
He's still very young, of course, and I notice you don't talk of him as being a team leader at this stage. Yeah. But what would be a good Giro for him? Is it the young riders competition? Is that what it's all about?
Well, look, I mean, as you say, he is very young, and we've never put pressure on him to go through a grand tour for, you know, every stage to be up there and not lose any time. I mean, he's only 22. So, you know, he's got lots of years ahead of him still, I think so. But, I mean, look, you know, he's a very driven individual and puts a lot of pressure on himself. We don't, we don't do that for him. He's self-motivated. But I guess he'd like to go top 20 in the Giro potentially, or even close to the top 10 if that's an opportunity. But we'll just see how his body copes through 21 stages.
A lot. He's not here, of course, but what's it like having Mark Cavendish on the team?
Yeah, Mark is the most amazing, inspirational guy in terms of the support that he gives to the African riders and the young riders in the team. You know, he commits wholeheartedly to support them when they support him. That's the nice thing about this team. We're not a one-trick pony. You know, we try and, you know, give opportunities to all. I mean, Mark was leading out Reinhard Jansen van Rensburg in Croatia. So, you know, Mark's been amazing. Just to have a guy like that who's won so many stages and tours, being a world champion, you know, in your team bus that you can talk to, it just lifts the whole team. So super excited about that.
And just finally, a lot of people in the UK, I think, were surprised when Brian Smith left the team. He seemed to be so involved over the last couple of years. I gather you've kind of taken on a lot of his responsibilities, but you just tell us a bit how that came about, his departure.
Brian built the team to this point. I was looking for sponsors last year. Brian brought in an amazing amount of good riders into this team and I guess advertised the team to be an attraction for some really good riders. So he kind of did his job. He was always the interim general manager, I guess. So, you know, now that we've secured our future as a team with Dimension Data, Deloitte, and our other partners, you know, he decided, you know, that he'd spend some more time with his family and we'd continue. So
does that mean more time behind a desk for you?
Well, it means more time at events and, you know, this is a passion of mine and a passion of many people, obviously, but Brian shared that passion for sure, but it was a big job and took a lot of time away from, you know, things that were really important to him. We're still friends, of course, and we move together and we talk a lot together, but it was a decision that we made jointly.
Always interesting to hear what Douglas Ryder of Dimension Data has got to say. Merhawi Kudus is the Eritrean rider, very highly fancied, young still, isn't he? And back in the Netherlands, after the final stage in Holland, he had quite a welcoming party, didn't he, Rich? There were a lot of Eritrean fans with flags who come to visit him. I don't think that day had gone particularly well for them because Kudus had a crash. He'd injured his elbow. And there was a bit of, although they'd had Johan van Zyl in the break all day, they should have been sort of quite happy. There was a bit of an atmosphere around the bus because Kudus, who clearly will want to go for a high overall finish, was annoyed that when he crashed, nobody was around to help him. And then one of the other riders said that Kudus's batteries in his earpiece radio had run out, and there was all a bit of a shambles, and there was no water in the shower, and this, that, and the other. And so it's still a team that's finding its way, I think, Dimension Data. But
first year in the World Tour.
Exactly, and it is a big step up. And as we saw, Rich, you know, Rolf Aldag's helping pack up boxes into bikes into cardboard boxes for the transfer. You know, it is all hands on deck. I think when you see a team like that and you compare it to the way Sky and Etics and some of the other huge budget teams are so well oiled, there is a real, you know, there's a hierarchy of the teams as well. And all of those little frictions, you know, they add up over a three-week Grand Tour. And so anything Kudus can do, you know, he's lost a couple of minutes overall so far, but that gives him a freedom in a way, because he can now be off, he can look for some results without being marked or feared in the overall classification. So it'll be interesting to see how they do.
I mean, they obviously made a lot of signings over the winter, including Mark Cavendish, who Douglas Ryder spoke a bit about there. But perhaps the best signing they made was Rolf Aldag, who at HCC High Road and at Etics was a meticulous organiser, a great planner, and I think over time he will prove to be a great acquisition. When we were listening to Douglas Ryder there, actually Kayleigh suggested that Tom Dumoulin might not be being entirely honest when he talks about what he's here at this Giro to do.
Yeah, I would say that if he was being entirely honest, and to be clear, this is about him mostly focusing on the first TT and the Stage 9 time trial, and those being the primary focus of his Giro. If that was true, he would not be riding to hold on to a pink jersey. I mean, if you look at where Fabian Cancellara is riding these couple days ahead of the time trial, and granted he was sick, but I spoke to some of his teammates this morning, and he's just sort of hanging out at the back of the field, saving his legs. He wants to win that Stage 9 time trial. If Tom was really interested in that TT, he would not go for a win on an uphill finish a couple days beforehand.
Interesting. I mean, he has said he wants to stay in contention for a week and a half, which means that he needs to be up there either in pink or very close to pink going into the time trial, maybe take pink back again. But this is the thing, isn't it? There's a sense that in the press conferences all these things leak out, and you know, there's the peloton itself will know if he's trying to pull the wool over the eyes of his rivals. Is it really worth it? I mean, they'll know whether he's good, whether he's, you know, whether he's responding quickly to every move. They'll see it with their own eyes soon enough.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for their sponsorship of the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia. Thanks also, of course, to Eurosport and to Maserati have given us a car, as we mentioned last night. We'll definitely mention that again at some point. Kayleigh's shaking his head.
We're in a Volvo V40.
I know, you actually left us behind today because we were observing the speed limit, and I'm not sure, if I'm honest, that you were.
Superior driving technique, I think, is what it is.
I think that's almost certainly true. But
yeah, I think Lionel was driving at that
you
point.
You were driving at that point.
I was
point,
driving at that point, but I was.
You were being very careful.
I was observing the speed limit, Kenny, and I'm shocked. I mean, do you know something that I don't about the laws down here in southern Italy?
I know that in covering the Giro now five times, I've never received a speeding ticket from one of those little camera things.
I didn't even see the camera things.
Wow.
So
wow.
You're ahead of me. Anyway.
I really don't think any of them work.
Well, I admire your confidence. I admire your confidence. More importantly, just before the Science and Sport jingle there, and by the way, before I get onto the Shark's Tale, do remember that you can get 20% off Science and Sport products at www.scienceandsport.com. If you enter the code SIS20, SIS20, 20% off for podcast listeners. So fill your boots, as they say.
Amore mio, sospirai, è la storia di tanti. Pensa a cosa dovrebbero dire le fidanzate dei marinai. Sarà, sospirò lei, ma io vorrei vederti di più. Tutti i giorni vorrei vederti. My love, I sighed. So many are in the same boat as us. Just think what the girlfriends of sailors must say. I know, she said, but I want to see you more. I want to see you every day.
We heard the Shark's Tale, Daniel's daily contribution while he's not on the race.
Extraordinary stuff.
Really extraordinary. I mean, it was like pillow talk. It was very emotional about the painful absences that his job necessitates. I'm not sure whether he was addressing his girlfriend or Ciro Scognamiglio.
That is a very good point. We should ask Ciro in the coming days, hey?
Yeah, we don't know, but really emotive stuff, and it's great to hear Daniel really getting into it in the way that he clearly is. I'm not sure where this is going to go from here, but
I think it's going to be a movie, isn't it? We've already got the music.
I'm not sure that we do have the music.
Anyway,
we're borrowing it.
Moving swiftly on, Rich.
Moving swiftly on. So, Kaylee, bumped into you at the start this morning, and you know you've been following the motorized doping, we call it, motors and bikes.
I don't like that term personally. Well, it feels wrong. Does it not feel wrong? We like motorized cheating or something like that. Just doping. It seems like it's just thrown in there to be a grabby headline or something like that.
Whereas cheating is not only a more accurate description, but it really is. It's the hardest term possible, really.
It is. Yeah. I think it. Yeah, it makes it seem like a bigger deal, right? I mean, it makes it seem like a worse offense, so to speak. So I like motorized cheating, personally.
You like it?
I love it, yeah. Have you ever ridden one of those things? They're fantastic. Oh, they're supremely fun, yeah. Maybe not to be used in bike races, but on your own, when no one else is looking, fantastic.
Let's cut to the chase, though, Kaylee. As I said, you've been following this story. I mean, do you think that... Well, two questions. Do you think that motors and bikes, we know they've been used in races, obviously. The under 23 cyclocross rider Femke van den Dresch was caught using one, and she's now been banned for 8 years. There's talk just in the last couple of days of some of her entourage also being punished, which I think a lot of people would welcome. Nobody imagines for one second that she acted on her own. Do you think that they have been used in and to win major races?
You know, if you'd asked me a year ago, I would have said no. I never particularly liked some of the sort of conspiracy theory style things that were out there. I mean, the videos, the Cancellara video, the Hegdal video, they just never really sat all that well with me. Now that we have proof, I mean, obviously, clearly, it's been done. Now, when you go back and you watch some of those videos, it certainly makes you wonder, at least makes me wonder a little bit more than I did before. After the Giro last year, actually, I had a conversation with Greg LeMond, and he insisted very, very emphatically that they were used and have been used and were continuing to be used. I have to say I didn't really believe him at the time. Now I would say, yes, I do believe that they've probably been used elsewhere in pro racing in the last sort of 5-6 years.
And the follow-up question is, do you believe that they are being used now at World Tour level?
I honestly do not. I spoke with the guy that's here from the UCI that's testing all the bikes, or scanning all the bikes, I should say, they're not really testing them, wandering around with his iPad-like device, which I'm now forgetting the name of, even though I looked it up 5 minutes ago. It detects magnetic fields. And so he's wandering around. They've already tested 500 bikes here at the Giro. They're going to shoot for about 10,000 bikes over the course of the season. I honestly think the stakes are probably just too high at this point. You know, maybe even 6 months ago, guys were trying to get away with it, but there's just too many bikes being tested now, and it's too easy to find. You know, the thing about physiological doping is that you always had some way to say, oh, it was a tainted supplement. It was some sort of error. So there's something else wrong. When it's a motor, it's a motor. You can find it. I mean, you can pull the cranks off and see it inside a bicycle. I just don't think that anyone at this point would risk it. But then again, we're talking about pro athletes here, and we've been proven wrong on that front.
But also, not just the riders, because this is something that, yeah, I agree that the riders will go to any lengths. We know that. And we also suspect that teams running systematic doping programs is a thing of the past. But we don't imagine for a second that no riders are doping. There will be riders here at the Giro doping, for sure. But for motor, for putting a motor in a bike requires not just the rider to be involved, but the surely the team, the mechanic, you know, a whole entourage of people. You must have spoken to a lot of mechanics over the years, as we have too. And this is what we talked about a couple of weeks ago in the podcast, that the impression we've always had is that the mechanics are as sort of baffled by this as a lot of people are.
Yes, absolutely. I asked a Cannondale mechanic named Jeff last year about this specifically, and he basically just laughed in my face. And that was one of the major differences between this and regular doping, is that when I talk to people about it, they seem to think it's funny. And when you speak to riders about doping products, even clean ones, it's not really a comfortable subject, and you don't tend to get great answers, and you definitely don't get smiles and laughs and things like that. When I ask riders about motorized doping, I literally just get laughed at. I had Ryder Hegedal laugh at my face and say that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard when I asked him about it at the Giro last year. I really don't think that most of them, A, have ever even sort of considered it or really ever even heard of it being used around them. If we're talking about it being used in the last, motors being used in the last 5 or 6 years, I think it was a very small number of individuals kept as tight as possible, you know, a rider and maybe one favored mechanic or something like that. That's as big as it could get without just exploding, I think.
What did you think of the French TV investigation that came out a month or so ago with the heat detection camera, which claimed that, you know, this was proof that bikes were literally glowing, and you could see that there was energy within the frames or within the bottom brackets. I mean, that tested my knowledge, because a bicycle's a load of moving parts. I mean, would that not generate some kind of heat? I mean, or how accurate are these detectors? I mean, it seemed to me a bit of a far-fetched documentary, I have to say. But.
Yeah, I hate to sort of disparage fellow media types, right? But I do think that could have been... it could have been done a little bit better. I could have pulled in a little bit more expertise. Those cameras, they can be very good, and they can be very, very sensitive. The UCI made this point in a press release not too long ago that a lot of the sort of the hot points that they saw were things like, you know, could be created by, you know, bearings, hub bearings, and things like that. Normally, bearings are not going to heat up like that under cycling use. It's just... there isn't enough force, essentially. But if you had a bad bearing, for example, and they only found seven or eight different bikes that they thought might be suspicious, you know, that could be the number of bikes that just have a bad bearing in the rear hub, and it's you know, essentially not working properly and creating and generating heat. And if it is generating heat, those cameras can probably pick up on it. The heat sensing cameras are an interesting one, because it is an interesting way to get at use in a race. But if you're not pointing the camera at the guy when he's actually using it, the motor's not going to be warm. When it's not on, when it's not actually being used, it's generating no heat whatsoever. And so unless you happen to point the camera at him right when it's been turned on, you're not going to get anything. So I think that the UCI's, the magnetic iPad thing that they use, I think that is probably the best way to find these things. And you know, because every electronic motor is gonna have some sort of magnet in it. You cannot create an electric motor without magnets.
Well, Kaylee, you said that this morning you saw them testing bikes on car roofs. I mean, a lot of people have contacted us on Twitter or by email saying, can't every single bike every single day be tested? And I was trying to do the maths. I mean, there's 200 bikes in the peloton, right? And then each rider might have one spare, so that makes 400. There's probably additional spares. You could be talking 500 bikes a day that would need to be tested. That's a lot of work that would need to be done.
Yeah, and I it doesn't take that long to test each one. I mean, I was watching the guy this morning, and he kind of just waves it around the frame, waves it around the wheels, you know, a bunch of time spent down at the bottom bracket. Probably takes less than 30 seconds per bike. But even so, if you're talking about 500 bikes before a given stage, they would either need an army of guys with little iPad things, or well, that would be really the only option, or give yourself like 3 hours to do it.
Or you restrict, you go back to the Henri de Grange days where, you know, you get one bike and the rider has to start the stage and finish the stage on the same bike.
I mean, like that
we're
idea.
We are almost going backwards, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they did. I think they looked at every single bike in the time trial. because I was standing at the, they do normal UCI checks because they check every single time trial bike before every time trial anyway. They're checking it for, you know, aero extension length and saddle position and things like that. And so they put it in that jig, just as they always did, and then it went to a second station, and that's where they tested for a motor. So they did test every single time trial bike, but I don't think that testing every single road bike is feasible. And I think if you're testing a large portion of them, which they clearly are, that is deterrent enough that, that it's not probably necessary to test every single bike before every single stage.
We should think about wrapping up. We're going to return to this story. I mean, you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago. I think it was disappointing the way the Stade story was picked up by quite a few respected media outlets, and perhaps the scrutiny, the skepticism that we apply to sports people, rightfully so, wasn't applied to that story. It could have done with a bit more scrutiny, and you've got to look at some of the sources of the motors and bikes story. They tend to be the same people, some of them with financial interest in the story. Let's just, you know, remain skeptical and remain open-minded to the fact that it could happen, and the technology will get better, it might get easier to do it, so let's not rule it out completely.
But apply the same rigor to the camp that's saying that this cheating exactly. is definitely going on as you would to the camp that's saying no, it's not. I mean, that's the other thing, isn't it? You can't automatically believe one side and not the other without doing a bit of investigation.
Yeah, it's a juicy story, isn't it? And it was picked up by lots of mainstream media with scant regard for whether it was true or not.
Yeah, and well, cycling fans, we've just been burned so many times, right? And I think that makes the cynicism somewhat understandable, but I encourage skepticism rather than cynicism is, I think, the way to go about this, and really just ask a lot of questions and ask a lot of questions of everybody and see where you end up.
You were definitely motor doping in that Volvo today, that's for sure, Kaylee. I'm going to check under that bonnet later on. We should wrap things up. We're going to need to go for a pizza, I think. Mm. And apparently we can go for a world-famous pizza here. So let's do it. In the meantime, Kaylee, we're going to be hopefully joined by you again on this Giro and, as I said, at the Tour de France. So thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Kaylee.